It's time to debunk some common myths about the financial markets. One of these myths is that South African markets are not performing well relative to those in the US. Well, that depends on what index you're using. If you pick the FINI 15, which is a good proxy for South Africa Inc., we're doing better than the US markets. Then there's the perception that interest rate cuts are likely to be followed by a rise in the US markets. Not so fast. That's not always been the case. And then there's a myth that the US dollar always rises when there's a market sell-off. Again, the research doesn't always back this view. Joining us to look into some of these market myths is Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth. Hi, Adrian. It's good to speak to you again. Let's talk about some of these myths. Firstly, the idea that South African markets are not performing well relative to US markets. True or not?
Hi, Kieran, and thanks for having me. You know, it actually makes for interesting conversation, I think. I mean, it's pretty well known that South Africa's been through a tough period and economic growth hasn't been good. And more broadly speaking, equity markets have been far behind what they would typically do over a medium period. So typically out of equities, you would expect something along the lines of inflation plus 6 or 7%. But the narrative that's out in the market at the moment is it's very much a SA Inc. type of story where if you're going to build an equity portfolio, rather focus on rand hedges, things that are shielded from the SA economy. Think of including some offshore stocks in your portfolio. And those things in themselves are not necessarily bad things, but they're motivated by the wrong thing. As you alluded to in the introduction, if you look at the FINI 15, so keep in mind, in this index, it's the 15 largest financial firms in that sector, and the largest listed REITs would be in there, so the likes of a Redefine and a Growthpoint, as well as our largest banks. And these businesses are most exposed to the South African economy. The banks rely on the South African consumer to be doing well, to be borrowing money, to be investing in businesses, buying property, etc. The property companies are highly leveraged businesses. We've been at the upper end of a higher interest rate cycle now. Only recently has that turned. So you would expect these things that are so exposed to the South African market to be performing terribly over the last few years. And that's largely the narrative that's out there. But if you actually go back to October 2020, and you see what the FINI 15 has actually done in terms of performance of those stocks, they're up 122%. And if you look at the S&P in contrast, because that's obviously the second part of the narrative, is don't invest in SA Inc. The US economy is firing. Rather go for equity opportunities on that side. So relative to the 122% of the FINI, the S&P is up 75% in rand terms. So that's even incorporating the currency weakness that we've seen over this period. And I don't think there's a lot of awareness around this amongst investors. What's also interesting is if you actually put two notional portfolios down, where you invest X amount of money in October 2020 to now, the FINI 15 portfolio is actually ahead of that S&P portfolio 95% of the time on all those trading days that we've seen since 2020, which I think is absolutely remarkable. But I think even more positive than that is that, interestingly, what's happened, in spite of this big price movement up, the 122%, we haven't really seen the valuations grow because the earnings have been even higher than that. The earnings have outpaced the price movement, which means those stocks, although they have actually moved a lot higher, have also gotten cheaper, which I think is incredibly interesting and just speaks to how these common narratives can often push investors out of things that are actually quite attractive because so much of the bad news was priced in. And I remember, I mean, there were multiple discussions way back then where we try to communicate it's not about, you know, just understanding what the challenges are. It's also understanding how much of that is priced in. And we were firm believers that there was just too much bad news priced into some of these businesses at that point in time.
That is pretty remarkable. But what about this notion then that US markets always rise when interest rates are falling? Does the history back this up?
Yeah, so I think why this one is interesting to me is that it's especially relevant right now because we've just seen the Fed cut rates by 50 basis points. And we also know that something that we've spoken of before is that US valuations seem quite stretched, especially at the upper end where there's all that concentration in the tech businesses. But no one wants to get out of their winning investments. You know, it's always one of those cases you want to hold on to your winners, and it's very easy to chuck the losers in the portfolio to the side. And that's actually counterproductive long term in terms of what you should be doing. You should be selling high and buying low. And what we see now is, I think, what investors are latching onto in an effort to justify holding onto these businesses is that they're saying, well, interest rates are coming down. Why on earth would I sell this? The US economy is doing fine. Interest rates are coming down. This is just going to be very positive for the US consumer. But in reality, these things do depend on other things beyond just what the Federal Reserve is doing. And I think where we are at the moment is the valuation component in that logic is actually very, very important. And we've seen this before in previous instances where market valuations were quite high and the Fed cut at the time, but the market sold off. So the Fed cuts couldn't prevent the market from selling off because the valuations were just so stretched. And we saw this during the dot-com bubble in 2000 and again in 2007 and 8. And we think something similar could potentially happen over the coming months. The other interesting thing is the rate cuts are normally preceding the recession that follows. So what we actually saw in 2000, for example, is in late 2000, the Fed started cutting rates all the way down from 6.5% to 1.5%. And the recession still took place 6 months later, and the market still sold off quite significantly. Way back then, the S&P was around 1,500 and sold off to roughly 1,000. And we saw exactly the same thing in 2007, where rates were cut down at late 2007. But in 2008, we saw a recession anyway. And I think investors just need to be mindful of that it's not always as clear cut as just follow the Fed. I think it's a very important variable to try and be cognizant of, but also be aware of some of the other factors that you need to take in consideration. And we think that's a really good point for this point in the cycle.
A lot of analysts are focusing on this idea that the US dollar is closely correlated with the S&P 500. What about that? Is that a myth as well?
Well, I think what we typically see, again, it's the common narrative that we say, well, you know, if the market will sell off, we'll see the dollar strengthen because the dollar is typically a safe haven currency and investors like to hide in dollars until things settle down. The extension of that argument is that investors will also try and avoid risky assets like emerging markets, and emerging market currencies will be under pressure, and all the safe haven developed market currencies will typically do quite well. And although that is generally true, especially during panic phases, we do see those assets do quite well. I think what the entire picture shows, though, is that the dollar strength is cyclical in nature, just like most things that we see in investment markets. In fact, it's not always a case where the correlation to from the S&P and the US dollar is negative, i.e. when the market goes down, the dollar will go up because of the fear. Actually, what we do see is there's 40% of periods where there's actually a positive correlation. So either markets are going down and the dollar weakening, or the markets are going up and the dollar strengthening. So at 40% of the time, that general narrative is incorrect. And again, there, I think it's something that we need to ask ourselves, why is that? And is there a risk that we could go into a similar scenario now? And again, the valuation argument comes into play because in our view, we think that the dollar is overvalued still. And it will do two things. There will be a limited ability to protect because it won't be able to strengthen indefinitely without coming back. So if you want to put that trade in place in order to protect yourself against the sell-off, you're going to have to be incredibly nimble to get out of the market at the right time. And that's where investors normally fall over. So they generally tend to get half of the equation right, and then on the other half, they miss the boat a bit. So I think in a long story short is, I mean, putting it all together, just be careful of these common narratives, but also there's a lot of merit in keeping a diversified portfolio in place, because some of the things that seem like they're obvious winners are the next cycle's losers, and the things that you think are not going to do well or haven't done well have a habit of surprising you. So on the one side, you can diversify. On the other side, we still think it's a really important time in the cycle to be thinking about what's expensive and what's cheap. The dollar looks expensive, US markets look expensive. So if you're going to use those as diversifiers, just keep that in mind and be cognizant of that when you put your portfolio together.
Yeah, you touched on something there on the whole currency issue, and the rand is always perceived as kind of a one-way bet against the dollar. Of course, that's not really been true now for many months. Currency's been volatile and unpredictable. That does drive funds into US dollar assets, but is that always a wise move?
No, I think you've got to retain a careful balance of a strategic allocation over time, and it does serve as an insurance policy at times. In other times, there's actually a good alpha opportunity. So if we think back roughly 2012, 2013, there was actually a very good opportunity for offshore investing because valuations were cheap and the dollar wasn't expensive. So you get the best of both worlds. You get the benefit of diversifying offshore, but it doesn't just manage your risk. You also had significant upside. But slowly but surely, that investment case will turn as everything is cyclical. And what happened first is that the assets started to appreciate in value. And that means the investment prospects tend to get lower because the returns are moving higher, they're becoming more expensive, so the future upside tends to come down. And if that continues, then the dollar is also getting more expensive. So first of all, what goes is the investment prospects tend to decline, or the upside, and then after that, you start to erode the risk properties or the protective properties of the dollar as well. And I think we've almost neared a point at an extreme where we're at the complete opposite side of where we were in 2013. No longer that are the valuations cheap on the assets, and no longer is the dollar cheap. In fact, both now the valuations are expensive and the dollar is expensive, meaning the upside is limited, far more limited than what they were 10 years ago. And the diversification benefit that you'll get out of the dollar has also likely been compromised.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for that roundup, Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth.